male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. With every presidential election, there's post-game analysis, and the losing party usually does some soul-searching and some reflection and say, what did we do wrong? What could we have done better? That's being done not only by the party officials of the Democratic Party, but also a lot of it's being done by the media. The media is not doing personal soul-searching, but they're wondering what went wrong and what could have been done better and what were the real issues and why did this happen. NBC has a recent story about Democrats' race and culture. Now, race certainly plays a part in decisions people make for who they vote for president and how presidents emerge. But are there other factors equally important that NBC didn't see, didn't mention, and didn't write about? Joining us to talk about that, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be here.
After all the ink that was spilled about evangelical voters and the Democratic Party in the last months, how did NBC manage to write a story about the Democratic Party and leave out religion?
You know, the short answer to that is I just don't have a clue how they pulled that off. I don't understand how. I mean, if anything, I thought at times that the religion angles in this election, if anything, were overcovered, especially the whole Trump and evangelicals thing. I think you and I have talked about before that I thought it was going to come down more to the Catholic vote in the Midwest, you know, and in blue-collar and Rust Belt areas, and that's how, proud to say, that's how it turned out. But at the same time, I don't know how you discuss either of the political parties without talking about their attempts to deal with religious, cultural, and moral social issues in the era we're in where those issues are so prominent. I wrote a piece about the NBC thing for Get Religion, which ended with a kind of a classic observation from Atlantic Monthly. And Atlantic Monthly dug into the race between Bill Clinton, different Clinton, Bill Clinton and Bob Dole, and discovered that in their polling for that election, Dick Morris and Mark Penn, who at that time two of Clinton's advisors, found out which questions they could ask that the answers would tell them basically who was going to vote for who. And, I mean, more than any other, these were the questions that had the highest accuracy response rate in terms of dividing Americans into camps for those two particular candidates and for candidates similar to them. Four of the five questions were about sexuality. And the questions were, do you believe homosexuality is morally wrong? Have you ever personally looked at pornography? Would you look down on someone who had an affair while married? Do you believe sex before marriage is morally wrong? And then the fifth question was, is religion very important in your life? But what they found was that these were the five questions that separated Bill Clinton voters from Bob Dole voters more than any other in terms of accurately predicting how people voted. And really, really fascinating stuff, because other people have found that the greatest point of differentiation between candidates is how often the voter goes to worship services in whatever their religious tradition is. The more people go to church or to their own worship services, the more likely they are to vote not for Republican candidates, but the more likely they are to vote for morally conservative candidates. The problem is that in this current era of American politics, that is almost always the Republican who holds themselves out, kind of Donald Trump style, as the champion of moral conservatism, which is, I think we all have a right to be skeptical about that in Trump's case. But once again, that was the story of this whole election, right? So how do you look at these kinds of factors and write a lengthy, and this is not a news story, this is a multi-thousand word long feature story, and it's about the history of the Democratic Party, where it was, where it's going, and how it needs to attempt to bounce back at the state and national levels. And out of all of that, the NBC political staff somehow managed to not have a single clear reference to moral, cultural, and religious issues.
Okay,
in American life.
Clear reference. Was there any coded references? Did they get close?
Well, that's why I began calling it a classic example of a get religion ghost. They would say that, here's one reference. All right, let me look this up and get this for you. The Democratic Party has undergone its own radical transformation from a Southern white party to a Northern cosmopolitan one. Now, you immediately stop and think there for a second. What is the word white being code phrased there for? Because white is not the opposite of cosmopolitan, correct? So it's kind of like the apples and oranges situation. So I would assume that cosmopolitan means urban, sophisticated, and what's being implied there is tolerant, progressive, etc., compared with Southern whites. And basically the whole thesis of this article is that the Democratic Party is in trouble because they are too liberal and too progressive on race. And thus, they lost this election because of the racist appeal of Donald Trump. Never says it that openly, but that's basically what it's saying. It gives you the whole history of how the Democrats used to be the party of the South. They used to be the party that kind of sent mixed messages or harsh messages on race. And then they began to evolve and change positions on a lot of things to be less racist and be actively engaged with racial equality. And thus they began to lose votes in the South. The Republicans gained votes in the South. Now, I've seen enough data on this. You'd have to be stupid to say that race played no part in this, and that's not what I'm saying. But there was this other event which actually birthed the religious right and created the organizations that led to the Reagan Democrat Revolution, and that event occurred on January 22nd, 1973. And how you write an entire piece about that era and the realignment of the parties without mentioning Roe versus Wade, once again, I'm at a loss. I don't know how you ignore that. The factor of Roe v. Wade's connection to the Supreme Court, and then the various other cultural issues that have come out of the court, which in story after story I've seen, including stories about Trump, when they pushed people who cast the crucial votes for Trump, the people who made up their mind to vote for him even though they weren't crazy about him, the issue that came up over and over was moral, cultural, religion, religious liberty, abortion, and the Supreme Court.
Do you think they kind of have this gigantic blind spot there in this piece? Or as you say, this just a closet full of ghosts, religion ghosts. Do you think it's there precisely because this piece was intended to frame the narrative, which is we should have won, Democrats should have won, but because Democrats are so progressive on issues like race and America is racist, we lost.
Or half of America is racist, yeah.
Do you think that accounts for the blind spot here? Because you're trying to frame a narrative, you don't throw extra details in to confuse people.
Well, if you're scared to deal with religion, which is kind of what Get Religion is all about as a website, if you're scared to deal with religion, or you don't care about religion, or to use that classic quote from Bill Moyers again, you're tone deaf to religion, you believe the worst thing you can say about someone is that they're racist, I mean that they're racial bigots, then you write paragraphs like the following, talking about the Civil Rights Act of the late 60s. That's when Republicans aimed their sights on the solid South and on working-class white Democrats everywhere. The GOP's Southern strategy played up racial grievances and highlighted cultural differences to lure voters away from a party that was drifting toward its liberal and urban wings. Now, what do you think cultural differences is code language for?
It has to be, if I'm not mistaken, has to be race or religion.
Well, and then you get into things that, frankly, race is there. I'm not denying the racial issues.
Right.
At the same time, there are complexities here. A friend of mine, a Democrat, by the way, a friend of mine years ago researched a book on the origin of Christian schools in the American South. And he expected to go in there and write an entire book essentially about white flight. People fleeing, you know, major cities in the South when schools integrated, heading to the suburbs and founding all white schools. That was his mindset. That's what he went into the project expecting to find. There was a problem, though. That's not what he found. He found from the beginning that those schools, especially Pentecostal and conservative Baptist, he found that a lot of those schools contained significant, not majority or anything, but significant numbers of African Americans. And what united them was their concern about marriage, family life, and their children being raised in a more conservative setting than that being offered by public schools. I first encountered this in the early 80s in Charlotte when the fundamentalist, and they would have claimed the word fundamentalist, the fundamentalist Baptist church in town that had this massive school. The first time I went out there, I was stunned at the number of African American students. And they were from morally and religiously conservative African American intact homes. They wanted their kids to not be exposed to what they felt were the moral dangers of public school, and they put them in this fundamentalist Baptist school. Once again, race is an issue. I'm not denying that there were elements of white flight in some parts of America, but you would also have to consider that there were culturally conservative Latinos, African Americans, and others who made up their mind on different issues. In other words, this is a both and situation, not an either or. In my post, I'm very careful to say over and over, yes, you have to investigate the role of race in this. But does that mean that you have to leave the 60s, the sexual revolution, Roe versus Wade, and the Supreme Court out of the equation? No, it's just shallow to say that you can't take on both at the same time.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about an NBC News story about Democrats, race, and culture. When we come back, does the media understand the relationship between Roe and the rise of the religious right? Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about an NBC News story about Democrats, race, and culture. Terry, you mentioned before kind of the omission of several things from that story, but the big one here, Roe v. Wade, and you had also talked about Roe v. Wade and the place that it plays in the rise of the religious right back in the 70s. Do you think the media understand that relationship?
Well, if they had attended, now that comes right before I began to get on the beat, the birth of the religious right. I didn't occur any of the initial early rallies. I did, however, cover the divisions in the Southern Baptist Convention beginning in the late 70s and in the early 80s. And I went to many of the national Southern Baptist gatherings where the conservative wing of the party, that would have been right about the time of the Lutheran Wars too, right?
Well, yeah, mid-70s.
So what role would you say that cultural revolution, sexuality, and abortion played in some of the Lutheran wars?
Well, that's a very good question. I would say, without researching it, it would certainly had to be a subtext of much of what was going on.
Or an issue on which biblical authority got tested.
Eventually,
well,
yes.
Well, at all of those Baptist meetings, there would have been messages to the Southern Baptist read to them from Ronald Reagan, you know, or Herbert Walker Bush, or whatever. You would have, and of course, you had the famous moment when Reagan stood up in front of clergy and said, "I know that you can't endorse me, but I want you to know that I endorse you." You know, that, you know, famous moment. Some people say that gathering and that speech by Ronald Reagan is the true beginning of the religious right in its revolt against Jimmy Carter, in that Carter, of course, a Southern Baptist from Georgia, with, at that point in his life, quite nuanced positions on abortion, actually some of which were very interesting. I would make a case that Jimmy Carter may be the only political leader in America who ever took a political action to stop abortions that hurt himself politically. You know, it was Carter was one of the people that refused to allow U.S. dollars to be spent on abortion. People forget Carter did that. And that pretty much created the Ted Kennedy revolt. It's one of the key issues that split the Democratic Party at that time. Which, once again, aren't we making the same point again, that cultural and religious issues played a major role not only in splitting Reagan Democrats off into the Republican Party? These were crucial issues at the heart of debates inside the Democratic Party in the Bill, you know, in the Bill Clinton era, and before that in the Jimmy Carter era. Bill Clinton had had kind of a 50-50 voting record on abortion until he becomes a national candidate. Al Gore, someone that I used to consider one of my political heroes, Al Gore, as a senator from Tennessee, a rather conservative state, Al Gore at one point had an 88% to 90% favorable rating from National Right to Life. You think you could get away with that now and be a national candidate in the Democratic Party? So the point we're making here is this is a part of the story. I'm dumbfounded how Newsweek managed to write this whole piece with no references to sexuality, morality, religion, Supreme Court, etc., in terms of this topic of the decline of the Democratic Party, and in particular, how that affected the 2016 race. It's a real puzzle.
I'm intrigued by the Morris Penn five questions that you mentioned before, where they could tell the difference, you know, just by asking these questions between likely voters on Dole and Clinton. I'm intrigued by that because I imagine the fifth question having to do with, what was it, attendance of religious services?
No, it was how important is religion in your life?
Okay, I imagine that one still holds sway, but boy, you could not ask those questions and get coherent answers when you were trying to decide between Clinton-Trump voters, could you?
Well, no, I think it would still be there. And once again, like I said earlier, we're not talking about the people who were on board from Trump from the beginning. And if I can do a little stereotyping of myself, we're not talking about kind of the AM radio pickup truck, angry Trump voter. Trump didn't win because he won the people who were with him in the primaries. He won because a lot of people that had serious misconceptions about him, especially Mormons and Catholics, he won because in the end they concluded they had to vote for him because of the Supreme Court and related issues to it, and thus they would risk voting for him because that was the only way they could vote against Hillary Clinton. As I heard people over and over say, I don't know what Donald Trump is going to do, but I know what Hillary Clinton's going to do on the issues that matter most to me.
How significant?
And once again, that's religious issues primarily.
How significant is this NBC piece if it is this riddled with omissions of the important things that really did make a difference to the decline or the eventual decline or whatever it may be of the Democratic Party? How important is the piece?
Well, I would say that, first of all, the Democrats have lots of demographic things on their side as long as African-American and Latino voters continue voting in their current patterns. There's another factor here that you and I have talked about in the past, but I'd like to remind listeners of it. You've heard me tell the story about how in the summer of 2008, John C. Green, the scholar of politics and religion from the University of Akron, spoke at a seminar that I was running in D.C. At the old Washington Journalism Center. Now, think about where we are in 2008 and how far that is ahead of the groundbreaking Pew Forum, which for whom he worked a lot, the Pew Forum study that talked about the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, and the rise of the religiously unaffiliated. Well, that was the meeting where, you'll recall, John drew up on our bulletin board, on our ink board on the wall, he drew this long line, and he said, in America, we've got about 22% of people at the far cultural right who are very consistently trying to practice traditional forms of religious faith. Then he drew at the other end. He said, now the rising factor in American life is the number of people who are atheists, agnostic, religiously unaffiliated, are part of those small declining liberal religious traditions that might politically group with them. Sexuality issues are the real key, but in that group is now getting up to about 20 to 22% of the American population. And then he said, in the middle, you have the muddled American masses who kind of make their mind up from election to election on moral issues. The people that I have frequently called in my book and elsewhere, I called that Oprah America in the middle. Now, remember, this is 2008. Obama is emerging, you know, on the scene, et cetera, et cetera. Here's what John Green said, though. He said, what I'm seeing in the polls is that this coalition of religious liberals, atheists, agnostics, and the religiously unaffiliated, this is now independent of African-American voters. This is now the largest single interest group in the modern Democratic Party. And it plays the same role in the Democratic Party that the religious right plays, and even the evangelical vote plays in the Republican Party. And then he said something really prophetic. This was 9 years ago. He said, at some point, we're going to have to ask whether this causes complications for the Democratic Party when it comes time to holding on to its old stable number of voters among working class, Catholic, labor, Midwestern, and Southern families. At what point does the religious identity of the Democratic Party begin to threaten its ability to hold on to what used to be part of its base? Now, I have hailed him for saying that many times. I thought it was a prophetic statement when he said it. It's the first time I ever heard anybody make that point. And when the religiously unaffiliated study came out years later, they interpreted the data the same way because the data had gotten even stronger. So, could we at least ask the question of whether the kind of bulletproof moral liberalism that is now the standard in the Democratic Party, might that be causing it some problems with voters who consider themselves even in the middle of the religious spectrum? Might that cause you problems in particular with Catholics, Mormons, and other folks that we might not think of as the religious right, but as kind of ordinary, go-to-church-occasionally Americans? Are the Democrats now too secular for them? NBC, to me, I don't know how they look at the exit data and how they look at these polls and not come up with that question. I would assume they never considered religion at all, or that just someone wrote it out saying, no, this is all about race, and that's that. Which is interesting because in the Midwestern states, in the Rust Belt states in particular, Hillary lost the election because of working-class Democrats who voted twice for Obama and then in this election voted against Hillary. It's kind of hard to pin racism on those voters.
If NBC doesn't understand what we've been talking about here, what about the leadership of the Democratic Party whose futures, both individually and corporately, depend on getting the answer to this question, these questions right? Do they understand?
That's a great question. Obama, if you'll recall, had an office of outreach, not just on religion. He had an office of outreach to evangelical Protestants. And he didn't win them, of course, but he peeled off a crucial number of evangelicals and got them in his camp for at least one election and some of them for two. Now, whatever the nature of that appeal was or how sincere it was, I don't know. But it certainly made sense to not write off that massive section of the American population. When the Democrats are sitting down and analyzing the exit data, I think they'll have to deal with this. They'll have to see it. They'll have to note that Hillary might have lost Florida because of the votes of Protestant Latinos, particularly evangelical and Pentecostal Latinos, apparently came out for Trump a lot. And in a close state like Florida, that matters. When Trump, with the wall and all of his statements on Hispanics and whatever, when Latino voters go Trump in a state as close as Florida, you win and lose elections over things like that. So I predict that they're looking into it. I predict that in his now kind of infamous memos, when Bill Clinton was writing those memos down the stretch to Hillary's campaign, pleading with them not to write off the blue-collar Midwest, I wonder if Bill Clinton mentioned in anywhere in there, can we at least suggest a willingness to compromise on moral and social issues? Do we have to be so bulletproof? We're going to know. Someday we're going to find out all the answers to all these questions. We don't know them now. I just can't believe that NBC didn't at least see the subjects were there and ask about them.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
As always, glad to talk to you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss four things that inform your conscience. Our series on the conscience with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller continues. On This Week in Pop American Christianity, we're going to talk with Chris Roseborough about the death and final prophecies of Bishop Eddie Long, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. The latest Issues Etc. journal is out. I conclude what is really a three-part series of essays on both myths regarding the law and the gospel. This is Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel, Part 2, Better Than Good. You can subscribe absolutely free. Click the red journal subscription button at issuesetc.org and enter your email address. That will get you the absolutely free online Issues Etc. journal. Tell your friends about it as well. Issuesetc.org. Look for that red subscription button. It's a free online Issues Etc. journal. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.
What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.